Hello and welcome to the Hub Systems Podcast, the voice of man's model moments, the blog of the various ramblings on the modelling and gaming antics of my son and I. My name is Alex Mann, and with me is my son Oscar.
Hello.
Today we also welcome once again frequent guest Matt.
Hey everyone.
And in this episode we'll be talking about Kickstarter. Before we get into that, however, we'll go through what people have been up to over the past week or so. So, Oscar, you've been away for a while. What have you been up to?
Well, probably the biggest thing that's happened is I went to Italy on a school trip, which was pretty fantastic. I mean, it's the first time I've flown anywhere. So, first time, I guess, I've been anywhere really tropical. Yeah, I suppose you could say Italy is tropical.
Well, Mediterranean.
Mediterranean, yeah, that's a better example. But, no, it was really good. I went up Mount Vesuvius, even though I didn't see any of Mount Vesuvius because we were in a cloud. But, no, the trip was really, really good. So, I'm assuming you've done stuff while I was away, so just...
Yes, sort of... we did mention that I didn't get that kind of school trip when I was a kid.
Oh.
No envy at all. You're not getting any Christmas presents.
Maybe one day.
So, on your trip, what would you recommend if anyone else was visiting there? What did you do that you would tell other people to go see?
The island of Capri was probably the highlight for me. It was fantastic. Because it's quite a rich island, but you go there and it's beautiful. Like, we got there and there was a mountain and there was the cloud on the mountain. Then as we walked around, the days started to clear up and the beautiful oceans and all the rock formations. It was just fantastic. And there's just orange and lemon trees everywhere. You can't look at anything without seeing an orange or a lemon tree. Just putting that out there.
All right.
But, you know, it was really good. Capri. Go and see Capri.
Well, and Matt will probably be familiar with oranges, I'm assuming, from Florida.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's this exciting land of oranges. And yeah, I mean, really, that I have oranges and tourists. That's what we have here. And then displaced other people from the states that all come down, then complain that you guys don't have culture. Then I have to remind them that we really, except for maybe, what, two cities here, 100 years ago was just forest and woods. So yeah, we're kind of new. It's all right.
Yeah, and you're still taking it back from the crocodiles and alligators, right?
At times, yes, we are.
Good stuff. How about you, Matt? What have you been up to?
I've been getting a couple games in with my friends, and nothing all that exciting. Been winning, losing, just playing around and trying out some different lists. Somebody's getting back into playing Aquins and Cerulean, so been enjoying that. I was planning possibly this yesterday, but it didn't end up working out, another test game for Adepticon. So I am gearing up. Everything's painted. Everything's good to go. And I've been talking to Phil and double-checking all of our room stuff. And so I'm kind of geared up and ready to go. Then just reminding the wife, hey, I am going to be gone. You realize that I will be gone for like a week almost.
Yeah, you don't want that sudden last thing. It's just like, are you all ready to visit Aunt Mary or whatever it is? It's just like, right. No, I'm away this weekend. Oh, you can't do that. No.
You have plans. You didn't tell me about these plans you had.
It's been on the diary for months. Yeah.
Hey, the nice thing is she bought my plane ticket as our Christmas gift.
Oh, wow. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. Then I just paid off her credit card today, so whatever.
Maybe I'll just drop that one to Mum. What do you think? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Do you think Mum would go for that?
No.
No.
just being honest.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, from my point, I've been decorating. That's pretty much what I've been doing over the last 10 days.
It sounds boring, but you've actually done a pretty good job. I mean,
oh, thank you. Yeah, we've done quite a bit, haven't we? I mean, you've helped out with holding stuff a lot.
Yeah, that's all. That was my job. Come and hold this door.
Well, I use this circular saw. Yeah. Yeah. Don't put your fingers in front of it.
What did you need a saw door for? What are you doing?
we had to replace a couple of the doors in the house and.
It was horrible. There was a broken screw, and we had to sort of half hammer, half screwdriver.
One of the screws was an old, you know, single slot screw,
mm-hmm.
and one half of the head had broken off.
So
we had to use a hammer and a screwdriver to sort of nudge it around enough to get a pair of pliers onto it. It took about 5 minutes to remove one screw, and it was horrible. But that's the problem with an old house. Yeah, advantages and disadvantages.
And I'm assuming with all the housework, we still haven't gone down to the mysterious basement with the killers and monsters.
I'm looking forward to that. That's like RPG starting, introduction story.
Well, we were invited round by our neighbours last night for some drinks, which was very pleasant. And they mentioned the cellar again. I reckon they're some cultists. just prodding us towards the ancient idol of evil.
There is. There'd be like a sword down there or something. With a curse.
Conveniently reminding you every single time they see you. Haven't you visited the cellar yet? Have you gone down to the cellar yet? You want to go to the cellar.
Yeah, we heard there might be treasure there.
Breaking news, the Mann family. Not of insulted.
Five bodies were found in it.
Let's not.
Well, that's like the Chuck E. Cheese. Apparently in Chicago, there was a Chuck E. Cheese where they found, which is like a kid's play place. So they bring their children
Chuck
there.
Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, it sounds bad anyways, but...
Only in America would you get somewhere called Chuck E. Cheese, yeah.
There was a basement there. A satanic cultist was killing people and they found bodies down there. I'm like, you don't hear that often. And you're like, really?
Oh my god, often? Never. That's like a one-off case. Surely.
I was going to say, we get a cat go missing and it makes the news here.
Well, the big thing on the news was when that woman put a cat in a bin and everyone got really angry.
Yeah, there was a massive public outcry. Yeah, the scale of news, especially local news in the UK, is somewhat different. Anyway, moving swiftly on. So normally this spot, the next regular spot, would be hit or miss, but really there hasn't been an awful lot out there in the past 10 days, a couple of weeks. The Games Workshop stuff really hasn't changed from when we rather dissected it over the last two episodes.
Maybe they've been listening.
No. They're not listening. It's all still there.
Oh, unfortunately.
Spartan don't have any new releases apart from the ones we obviously already knew about and talk about. But we do actually have, we are lucky enough to be in the possession of some of the actual resin Task Force ships. Now, I appreciate this might not be as exciting a moment for Matt, seeing as that he doesn't have the ships. But my sympathy is limited by the fact that he's in Florida and it's 80 degrees and we're in the UK and it's about 3. So, sorry, Matt.
I have, and this goes for everyone else out there, so obviously by the time they hear this, they'll already know this, but the banner on the Spartan Games site is now scrolling through all the Task Force ships.
Yeah. And also, I believe, the artwork from the front of the Task Force book, which is a nice little view of the Terran Light Cruiser. If we actually get our resin here, we actually have one of the Terran Light Cruisers here. And what do we think, Oscar? Have we modified our opinions?
I really like the Terrans. I think they have some of the coolest new ships, actually.
Yeah, and actually just the way that these ships are put together is actually really neat. It's what you can't see on the renders. So I'm just looking at one of the Harpoon, the torpedo cruiser. And if you actually take it apart, the two different pieces, there's actually a ridge on it with three places for 2mm magnets. On top of the ship, you've got a corresponding groove that fits with the ridge. So there's nice alignment pieces here. So if you do want to glue it, it'll be very secure. Or if you want to magnetize it, it will still hold in one place and not slide about. But this is a really, really nice system. It's obviously been thought about pretty well.
And it's not just the Terrans, it applies for all of the factions.
Yeah. I mean, there's really nice under-detailing as well. So the Harpoon has some turrets on the broadsides. And they're really, I mean, really nicely detailed. Detail that you won't actually see when it's assembled, really. And certainly you can't really see it very well on the renders. So the detail density has certainly gone up, I would say, in terms of the small areas. You probably have sub 0.5mm detail on these ships. So it's really fine. So they're really very impressive. Yeah, I mean, it goes through all of the ships. Still, one of my favourites is the Directorate Small, the Impact. It's really, really nice. They have a good theme together. They all look fairly consistent within the factions. It's just really, really good quality resin. And I think the Aquans as well are some of the best examples.
But it's annoying because my favourite now, one of my favourites, is no longer actually my faction because it is actually the Ralphosa. Which are annoyingly my favourite ships.
Now, is that because you're playing against your dad all the time and you have to see them all the time on the table and you're suddenly falling in love with his army?
I am suddenly... It's hours and hours of being beaten by them. I just want to join them now.
So I do have a question about the Terran. So I see that the light cruiser and the harpoon have like different inner pieces. One that almost looks like a turret, and the other one maybe a shield generator. Are those interchangeable?
Yeah. So basically, there's a single magnet position for each of those, so you could quite easily just swap them through. And I think actually on Spartan Games shop pages, or maybe it's the blog, they actually have a picture, which is the Perseus, the light cruiser, with the shield generator actually in that position, rather than the turret, which I think the shield projector is meant to be part of the harpoon. So yeah, obviously completely interchangeable.
Oh, nice.
Actually, I think one of the nicest ones for me are the Cerulean. They have these really tiny reinforced guard shield pieces, and they are small. They're 3 millimeters across by maybe 11 or 12 millimeters long and a couple of meters thick. You know, this is stuff that Spartan would traditionally have done in metal, and they're now casting this regularly in resin. I mean, they really have pushed the technology quite a long way with this, I think. It's pretty impressive.
If you look back at some of the original Spartan models, I mean, it's incredible now what we're at. Like, if you look, the detail is just crazy, the way you've got all the, at the end of the Dindrenzi rail cannons, you've just got an insane level of detail.
Yeah, and the Dindrenzi ones are quite amazing. I mean, I don't think there are any of these that you look at and think, well, it's not too much of an improvement, or, you know, it's pretty much the same. They all really show quite high levels of increase in detail.
So I guess I got two, three things on this. First off, especially I'm not with you all. I'm not in the same room. Magic of, you know, the internet.
You'd love these parts if you were here.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
How are the ships in scale size to the other cruisers? Are these similar? Are they larger?
Yeah. So, for instance, an Isonade cruiser, which is quite a slim vessel, it's a little bit longer. So the Aquid Light cruiser, cruiser actually, I think it is just a little bit longer than the main hull of the Isonade. So when you put the piece on the front, then it probably goes a little bit more than that. But it's about twice as wide. And actually, I've weighed these, and they're about the same mass. It's very slightly less. So it's a different configuration, but it's a similar kind of size. Likewise, the Terran cruisers are, again, very similar, virtually the same size as the Hermes.
Nice.
And you know, they are pretty much the same. I am that sad.
But how many other gamers out there go weigh their models? That's what I want to know.
Okay, moving on.
One thing that I like about the Aquin frigates, or light frigates.
Yes, it is light frigate.
Is how minuscule it is. I mean, it's longer than a snapper, only slightly, but it's a stick.
Yeah, but it actually kind of looks like a miniaturized Charybdis or Triton.
It does, actually.
The kind of scalloped, I mean, if you turn it upside down, it looks a bit like a shark, you know.
I was just noticing that it has a fin on the bottom. I was like, that's kind of cool, but it's facing the wrong direction.
I mean, it's just, they are just really nice models. And I don't think anybody who's buying these, either for Task Force or for Firestorm, will be disappointed. I think they are definitely all hits. I don't think there's a single model in there of any faction that I would say is a miss.
I suppose if you had to be annoying, it'd be the Dindrenzi frigate, but that's just because it looks almost the same. But it doesn't.
No, I mean, actually,
I think it does.
I think the Dindrenzi frigate's great. It looks like a cross between a Sigean and a Thrax. It's kind of, it has that feel of both. You know, it's got some amazing detail as well.
The detail is everything sort of just raised, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you really didn't like whatever stats come out for these, you could easily use those as corvettes, you know?
Yeah.
I suppose once you bought the models, it's each for their own.
Yeah.
The models.
And the Terran Small, you know, it could, I think you could scale that up completely and it would be a cruiser. The detail on it is as good as that. You know, they're really, really impressive.
Did you guys get a chance to see the video Neil posted on the Spartan Games channel?
Yeah, I did.
I have not.
I guess one of the two other items I mentioned earlier that he kind of tagged on in there that I was just curious about your thoughts on this, and you're already talking about being modular. He was talking about the ability of possibly even printing or creating more pieces, either tops or bottoms or front and backs for these to kind of have different combinations of ships come out. And I think it's neat. This is kind of a nice way to go do this. I would love to see how a tier one actually might function as a multi-part kit.
Yeah, and I think it opens up great possibilities, especially for, you know, if you think of how the two-player box sets have gone. You know, originally the Battle for Valhalla, which, you know, had a set of models and it had two new battleships.
It was nice. They were good battleships.
But the cruisers and the frigates were standard, right? They were new, but they were the same ones that then appeared in the patrol fleet boxes.
Yeah.
Return of the Overseers, we start to see some of the modularity coming in. So we have new models. We also have parts that are reused for the Directorate R&D cruisers and gunships.
And save for the Atkins with the new gunships.
So really nice to see this sort of evolution. So you think, fingers crossed, Ralthosa and Cerulean two-player box set, using multi-part models, you might be able to get different configurations of the ships in there. You know, it opens up some really nice possibilities, hopefully without inflating the price either. So
yeah.
That's actually, fingers crossed on that one, because that's been something I'm like looking at the prices. I have bought two sets of every single Xenian League set coming in. I've been watching, even right before this, I ordered through the War Store, being in the States. Already checked it. This says it's on back order. I checked today because Phil was talking about his stuff is already slated to come in at a certain time. And so we're kind of watching the timer tick down. Will this stuff be legal for Adepticon? And I'm looking, it's like, okay, how do I do this? Do I have magnets? Do I need to go get my my right millimeter magnets to do this? And just because I'm not fielding any of this for Adepticon, but I'm looking for even my own self, because obviously I'm kind of a sucker for it, but it was cheap enough. And these are actually fairly good box sets, because you come with all the light frigates, or corvettes, what's in there. And it's not like a Games Workshop where I'm buying a multi-part kit and I'm being charged for at least two kits worth.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's a really nice direction. Model-wise, I think it's really good. I think the only other thing that's worth mentioning, actually, in the kits is the smalls actually have a different base size.
Do they? I didn't even know that.
Yeah, yeah. So the base sizes are a lot smaller. Now, you can think immediately the advantages in Firestorm alone are that you've got your squadrons of smalls there. You know, if you think of your snappers, a squadron of six snappers takes a lot of actual room on the tabletop purely because of the bases. Because actually the models are tiny. Whereas this allows you to get those, well, much closer. Now, whether you'd want to do that for if you're facing Terrans.
Yeah, explosion bases.
But yeah, it's also interesting for manoeuvring.
Yeah, what happens if you have a map with a lot of terrain? It's a special event sort of thing where you have a higher percent terrain than you're normally used to, and you might be able to get your smalls in and out of these difficult areas.
Yeah, yeah. So some interesting things there. We'll have to see what it throws up for Firestorm more generally, especially with the, you know, the speculation that we talked about last week about version 3 or 2.5.
Do you guys see that? I'm looking at on the main website, I'm looking at the small bases. Do you notice the smalls actually have tick marks in the middle of the different segments where you normally have the crosshatch lines to get the arcs? But right in the middle, right along the edge, they have a slight cut in where it's a white line indicating the directional piece. Yeah, obviously good for podcasting.
Okay, so we're just looking at the website now, and you can see on the small bases, in each of the flat faces, there is a little tick mark. Now, I think Neil mentioned some of the mechanics on that video as well. And I think they're using a pivoting system similar to Halo. I think that will be so that you can easily line up where that pivot goes to. So I think that's to do with
that'd be useful.
I mean, it might not be. It might be completely wrong, but I'm guessing that. Don't see it on the medium bases, though.
Yeah, I was hoping maybe they'd be on both if that was a system, but we'll have to find out.
So maybe I'm wrong.
We're getting whole new medium bases and they just haven't shown us.
Yeah. Yeah, this could be a tease.
Who knows? Who knows?
Speculation abounds.
Okay. I think we should end our speculation. Big hit on the Task Force models. Really, really nice. Very impressive. And I think anybody who's pre-ordered or is thinking of ordering these models will not be disappointed. Heartily recommended, I think. So on to the main topic, and because it's a bit slow, we're thinking about what we could do. We've already talked about Task Force. We speculated about Firestorm Armada version 3. We don't obviously have the PDF download of Task Force rules, so we can't really talk any more about that. It would be pure speculation. So we're thinking, what could we talk about? And one of the things that I was talking to Matt and Nathan about a couple of discussions ago was Kickstarter. And we have dropped quite a lot of money on Kickstarter over the past year, in 2015.
Not going into detail.
So we thought we'd revisit Kickstarter and, you know, whether it's a good thing for the gaming industry, the kinds of things that we've backed, the kinds of things that are out at the moment, and the kind of whole philosophy of it, really. So, Matt, have you backed any Kickstarters of late in the past year or so?
Actually, the last Kickstarter I did was a little longer back. I think I did Deep Wars because it was based out of Miami, but it's in Florida. It's a good 5 hours south of me. It was an underwater game similar to War Machine Hordes-esque. It had some similar feel on it. It was just a very neat kind of steampunk feel underwater sort of environment. I got it. It came in good, no issues with it, and I haven't played it yet, so good job on my investment.
We've done the same with two games, though. We've got Wild West Exodus and...
Well, Wild West Exodus wasn't a Kickstarter.
Wasn't it?
I think it might have been originally, but it's an established...
But that's somewhere, game. I don't even know where it is.
Well, because we've been moving, we've kind of had to pack everything, and it's... The games room is progressing. In fact, I just received a package today with the rest of the adhesive to put all of the insulation tiles on. So we are gradually unpacking all of the gaming stuff. So the gaming room, as it shall be, will have areas that we can do everything on and
actually use the Kickstarter.
Use all the Kickstarters. Very nice. In fact, yes. So yes, we did get Wild West Exodus, which we haven't yet played, which we will come back to, and also Maelstrom's Edge is the most recent Kickstarter we received.
But prior to that, the most recent we've backed.
No, not the most recent we've backed. So we'll come on to those a little bit later.
I do have one question here before we proceed. Is there a reason that we're doing it tonight? Is possibly your wife is out and about, and so you can actually talk about all the Kickstarter investments you've done?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm double checking because I was like, this might be a hot topic at the home to cover exactly how many things we should be having arrive in the mail.
And I know she doesn't listen to this podcast, so. Oh. and it's extremely unlikely that anybody that she knows does either.
Lucky us. Or I guess you guys.
Oh. I remember backing this said game.
Ah, now, yes, we have had actually another one, which is Exploding Kittens, which we didn't back as a Kickstarter. We did actually go retail on this.
But it is amazing.
But this kind of highlights some of the things. So Matt's just sent us a link here. Matt, do you want to just talk us through it? Because this is a Kickstarter that was very... very highly backed.
Yeah, it went really wild. The Exploding Kittens was just a fun little graphical game you're trying to get the kittens to explode in someone else's hands and not yours?
Yeah, if you get an exploding kitten, you die. So
right, so that's
it's
bad.
It's about mitigating that, yeah.
There's a lot of concerns and worries on the Kickstarters in general on the fact that you don't set it up right, you can end up spending too much of your income and either breaking even, possibly making a profit, or in a lot of cases that people will pretty much bankrupt themselves early on in this. And they're talking about on Exploding Kittens here, no one's getting rich. And talking about the backers, it made almost $9 million from, was that 200 and, was it 200,000 pretty much backers on that? All right, so basically the idea is, you know, there's a number of Kickstarters out there that do have struggling issues to go ahead and reach their goals of getting their products to the market, as well as making a profit on this. And this is a good article example that maybe we'll be able to post this up in the show notes of, you know, beware of trying to do a Kickstarter on your own end because there's a chance that you might not actually make a whole lot of money off of it and be subject to a tremendous amount of responsibility to your customer base and usually is what a fairly small amount of time when you, but then some of these things will explode, you know, almost $9 million in revenue income before turn around and producing the products and needing to go ahead and get that back out. Some of these cards are hilarious.
Well, I was just looking at the article actually, and I think this is one of the things. It's a bit like eBay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So eBay, if you actually look at it, if you look at what you're paying for eBay fees, PayPal fees, which is, of course, an eBay company, you're paying around 30% on most of the stuff that you sell. to eBay. So actually, the winners of this are eBay. Right. So you sell something, you've then got to ship it. You can't add PayPal fees onto your listings. That's illegal. You know, it's very much stacked against the seller. You know, especially if you're not selling them for the for what you wanted to sell them. You know, it's an auction site. You can set your minimums, but you want to sell them. Kickstarter, I feel, is kind of like eBay was at the beginning, where I'm just looking here. Kickstarter fee is 5% of the total funds raised.
Mm.
Now, that's quite a chunk.
When it gets if you high think enough,
5% is off your top line because your costs will be the same, whatever. So effectively, they're taking 5% profit. So that's a lot. Then you've got payment processing fees as well, which here I'm looking at 3% plus 20 cents per pledge. Now, that's again, so we're talking now 8% plus 20 cents per pledge. If you've got 1 million backers, that's not insubstantial either. You know, it's quite a lot. So 8% off your top line is actually a lot. Being in mind that you have to actually, and I think this is what this article is really saying, you've got to make the game.
Yeah.
Everybody's pledged, say, $15. If it takes you $12 to make it, you get $3 off each of those. But that's $3 after the 8% that's come off that total 15. So, you know, it's one of those things that the real winners out of this are Kickstarter themselves, right? Because they do 5% for hosting this on their website.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure that their costs are nothing like the actual people who are producing this stuff. So,
well, just for hosting it, these guys earned, if my math is right, like over $400,000 just for hosting Exploding Kittens.
Yeah. And, I mean, they've done all the maths on this, and it says, basically, Exploding Kittens made $750,000 left after the project. So out of the, what was it now?
Over almost 9 million.
So 8.7 million, the 0.7 is what they were left with. So 8 million went on costs and on the fees. So $750,000 between, I don't know how many people actually started this, but you're right. You know, that's not a lot that's left after that kind of level of interest. You know, as the article says, no one's getting rich out of this. Whereas Kickstarter, as you say, they hosted this on their site and they earned half as much.
Exactly. But, like, I suppose, I know they're always making profit with whatever's put on, but, I mean, when something gets this successful, Kickstarter must just be like, yes, because they're getting a lot. But there is a lot of rubbish on Kickstarter as well.
Now, that is a nice segue, Oscar, into the very first thing I'd like to talk about, because I've just had a quick look on Kickstarter here, and I looked at games, because, of course, this is a podcast about games, primarily, and anybody can put anything on, right?
Yes.
So, one of the things, just looking through all the games, there are an awful lot of deck-building card games. So you can get a deck-building card game for absolutely anything you can think of, really. There are quite a lot of board games.
I suppose if you think about it, they are the easiest kind of thing to produce.
Well, I guess the card games are relatively easy. You've only got one set of printing costs, effectively, after design. Board games introduce other elements then on top of that. You also have quite a few digital games, so app-based or, you know, for PC or whatever. And relatively few miniatures games, which is really the ones we're interested in out of all of these, right? Now, one of the ones I just wanted to bring to everybody as a great example of what not to do. Where is it now? Oh, there we go. Sorry.
To your left. Keep going, keep going.
So this
going.
Is one.
Yeah, to your left. Oh. It is
called
right there.
Allies versus Islamic State first person shooter.
I like the way that there is a backer.
Now, who I think must be the guy who actually started this. Decided to just
so
get
he's
it
got his game.
He's eagle backer.
His game for $1 out of his pledge goal of 15,000. It's got 20 hours to go. Last chance, folks. By the time this is out, it'll probably be over. I mean, Allies versus IS, a game like COD or Counter-Strike that focuses on the Allies destroying the Islamic State before their hate takes over the world.
Now, okay, scroll down. What does he get for $1? Because, like, this must have been a reason he did this for
you get
$1.
Featured in the... Oh, no, you don't. That's pledge...
No,
you get
nothing.
Nothing.
He He didn't even reach a goal to gain anything.
So we are a small group of gamers. Oh my god! So I mean, this is all that's wrong with the world today, right? We want to make a game based on hate.
Life.
I mean, this is wow. Not good.
No,
you know, it's very political. I mean, I guess it's good. I'm quite encouraged the fact that this only has a single backer. Oh, it's 19.
But he wasn't smart enough to actually hit a pledge goal,
which
so that's okay.
I think kind of highlights the point.
Has anyone noticed how the Versus is from Alien versus Predator?
Yeah, well, it looks like a collage of pictures taken from the internet with their
very badly
text
put
badly put in over. In fact, they've spelt development incorrectly. So that doesn't give you an awful lot of faith that they would actually complete.
May I ask
anything.
How you found this?
I mean, this was...
Well, if you scroll up to the top, you also see there's like a tiger or lion in the upper right-hand corner in the storm cloud and some sort of like Masonic symbol in the upper left.
It's just...
hasn't looked back over this.
So this highlights the point that anybody can do Kickstarter, right?
Yeah.
And the risks of Kickstarter is that you back some crazy, you know, strange political thing. And I notice actually, though, Matt, it's based in Florida. it wasn't chosen deliberately because of that, I assure you. But, you know, you've got some crazy wacko guy who decides, you know, they've had some bad experience, so I'll put it out here. You know, I'm sure that people will back it. No, you're on your own, guy. So I think that's kind of the low point of Kickstarter, the kind of thing that can be there. But I think one of the, and this is really, I think one of the things that I wanted to discuss is Kickstarter a good thing? You know, is it good for the gaming industry? Is it good for people generally? I mean, what are people's thoughts? What do you think?
Generally, I think Kickstarter is a great thing because I'm sure, like, you know, a bit cheesy, but everyone wants to make a difference, don't they, to the world and everything. And I think this is really a really good way to do it because otherwise you have to get famous or something like that, etc. You have to do all this stuff. But, like, I mean, I know people work hard on here, but it's actually quite a good sight to say, like, hey, I think this is a good idea. Who else does? And I mean, sometimes really good ideas get shown on this and they get known by Kickstarter. I just think it's a good way to express something that you really want to do. Because if you want to do something really badly, like make a game, generally it takes a lot of work. You have to get into big companies, etc., or you have to go into game writing. I might be completely wrong because I'm 15 and I don't know anything. But actually, I think Kickstarter is quite good for this, for doing this whole kind of, I'm going to do this one-off thing by myself or with a big group of people.
I think your opinion is as valid as anybody's, Oscar.
Well, that's a very nice sentiment from the father. Well done. It's actually not a bad thing, but it has a double-edged sword here. So you have, in the States, most of our gaming locations are also gaming stores that are not owned by big gaming companies based in the UK that we go in and go ahead and support by purchasing product through those stores. Yeah. So in certain cases of a complete startup and is an unknown, I think I'm more apt to being interested in this. But if it's a gaming company that's, you know, that I'm now buying it direct through them, that means I didn't spend any money at my local game store that may not be able to keep open or stay in the local area, give me tables and a place to play that my wife doesn't yell at me for taking over the living room.
I think that's a really good point. And I think this is part of the crux of the, you know, the younger generation, shall we say, Oscar.
Yeah.
Talking about the expression of, you know, individuality and that kind of, you know, getting ideas off the ground. And I think it's easier today in many ways to get your idea off the ground than it has been in the past. I think the access to the kind of technology and visibility is there. I think you will also always get driven individuals, right? Like Sinclair with his crazy cars and computers, you know, popularizing that sort of thing. You'll always get those entrepreneurs regardless, you know, the Lord Sugars of the world. Dare I say the Donald Trumps, although maybe that's not...
No, don't. He's not in this.
It's a topical but perhaps not popular choice. I mean, there's a very optimistic side there. But then, as Matt said, there is a darker side or a darker result of some of this, which is if existing companies are using this in a way to pre-sell product that they don't necessarily think, maybe they're a bit lazy and just think, hey, you know what, we've got an idea for a product, but we're not really sure it's going to work and we don't want to back it ourselves because that'd be risk, right? So why don't we put it on a Kickstarter?
Yeah.
You know, then we get all these pre-orders. If it works, then maybe we'll do it. And you're right, you know, it doesn't benefit the local game store at all because they're cut out of that loop completely. And we're seeing it in other ways. I mean, pre-orders as well. I know JD Gamercast have talked about the pre-order culture. And, you know, again, that cuts out the local support. So in an internet-based age, you know, everybody's used to doing internet everything now. You know, you go onto Amazon, you can get almost anything the next day.
It really, really destroys the local.
Yeah. So, you know, the little shop down the corner that's convenient to go and buy milk from, if you could buy milk from Amazon, would that shop go out of business? You know, it's possible, right?
It's possible, isn't it?
And that's kind of what we're doing to gaming through these kind of internet-based methods, perhaps. So I can see both sides of it. I'm not really sure where it is. And for me, there are some really, I mean, we've seen some really cool projects on Kickstarter. Because,
yeah,
and obviously we backed them. Some actually haven't come through. That one, that 28mm game that we thought looked really good, that didn't get funded.
Refresh my memory.
Aliens with six arms and...
Oh, the Chimera ones. Yeah, they look so cool.
You know, and you can see that visualization of an idea and you think, yeah, that's really good. But then it doesn't happen.
You do feel sorry for that, don't you?
Yeah.
But exactly, that's what you said earlier. Like, if they did back them themselves, maybe it wouldn't have kicked off and they would have lost money. They may be shut down anyway. So it is a good idea to set off these projects that you don't think are going to work.
Yeah, or you don't know.
Exactly.
But I think Matt's point about companies is a good one. And we do have a prime example here. And let's talk a little bit about that. The Walking Dead.
Oh, not this again.
What's the problem with this?
I'm not saying it's a bad show, but it is everywhere. Everyone loves The Walking Dead. It's
well, just one of these... this is kind of the point. And I know Lang and Nathan have talked about this, but this is a good example of what Matt just said here. So The Walking Dead, all-out war miniatures game. Not even sure if that's a proper sentence, but... So this is the last week. It's EU-friendly. Fantastic. And it smashed its goal. $50,000 was the goal. It's almost 10 times that. $471,440 with 4 days to go.
Oh,
it's just gone up. It just got up to 565 on the end there. 3,052 backers. But, and here's the killer bit, it's by Mantic Games.
They're all right.
So Mantic Games are an existing company, though. This isn't one guy in his shed thinking, I could do a Walking Dead game. And, you know, he gets on the phone to the guys who own the IP and say, could we do a deal? I've got these really cool sculpts and he's a really talented guy and stuff. This is an existing established gaming company that must have bought the IP for this and then have basically gone out and asked for money in advance of actually producing the game rather than...
Yeah, when they knew they were going to get money for it anyway.
Exactly. It's a safe bet.
Going back... Just quickly want to say that there's nothing wrong with The Walking Dead. It's just there are so many zombie things out there and it's just, you know...
Well, it's a current theme.
It's a current theme. But Mantic, I mean, they knew that it was going to make money. Seriously, like, everyone really likes The Walking Dead. It just went up again. Everyone really likes The Walking Dead. So, obviously, it's one of those things where, like, this is going to work kind of thing. So, like you said, it sort of just kills it a bit.
Well, and it kind of goes to, I guess, the flip side of that is Spartan with Halo. Now,
right. Could you imagine Halo coming out as a Kickstarter? Like, then how does the developers of Walking Dead go, we're not confident enough in you to go ahead and produce a main game, so you have to Kickstarter The Walking Dead?
Yeah, although interestingly, if you look at the detail of this, this is actually based on the characters from the pages of the best-selling The Walking Dead comic series from Skybound Entertainment. So, and I know that the show is based on the comic as well. But this isn't what everybody will instantly think of.
That it was, yeah.
It's like, oh yeah, I've seen The Walking Dead. I'll get this. It's like,
and people don't read the small print, do they?
It kind of is, but it's kind of not as well. So it's.
But I suppose then you get people who have read the original comics. Like I've read The Walking Dead since the comics, so I'm going to understand more about this. You know, like the ones who really.
That's true, but it's kind of almost
cheating.
It's not. Deliberately deceiving necessarily, but it feels slightly underhand. It's a bit like being sold a car and you know it's second hand, but you didn't realise it had a big scratch on it. they didn't not tell you, just didn't tell you either. You know, it's like it just feels slightly off, you know.
You just stood in front of that scratch the whole time when I was talking to you.
Yeah, It's like, well, I was there. You saw the car for yourself. Yeah, it's kind of that, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
So it is that bit of, you know, should an existing company actually put out a Kickstarter?
Then I suppose you can't exactly stop them, can you?
No, but again, if I'm a shop that already stocks Mantic Games stuff, you know, Dead Zone or whatever, and then suddenly they see the Kickstarter, it's like, that's a kind of a, you know, that's the two fingers, you know, screw you kind of thing to the retail stores.
You've lost what maybe anywhere between 50 to 60, possibly even higher percentage of the people interested in this because they've already pre-purchased it online. And they go, oh, well, how many should I order? Should I order 10, 15 starter boxes of these? I already have mine, man. I'm sorry. I guess I'm not buying it here. Then they're just going, great. All right. Hopefully I can make rent this month.
And, you know, one of the ways that Mantic try and get around this, because this is, you know, 3,053 backers, this starts at $75. There's no $1, you know, have our thanks and, you know, a sweet kind of pledge level.
The thing, they're sort of getting to that point where it's like, you need to pay this much. Come on, yeah, cough up.
It's just, it's basically $75. So this is the game. So you've got basically 3,050 odd people
paying at least.
Who are paying, you know, who are buying the game. That's 3,000 people that aren't buying the game from stores.
Mm.
You know, even if half of those people bought on the internet, or 2/3 of them, that's 1,000 that aren't buying through stores. So 1,000 stores aren't going to make any money on those.
Oh, did you notice there? They did 11 that have been, 11 of 11 have been backed. If you scroll up, it shows Mantic Games. It shows almost like a history rating. Keep going up, 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 up. Almost right there. It says Mantic Games created 11, backed 11. So these guys have been doing this a while.
Yeah, I mean, Mantic are kind of quite known for this. So they've done The Walking Dead, they've done Warpath, the sci-fi battle game, Dead Zone, Infestation, Skyfy, skirmish game, Kings of War, fantasy battle game, second edition, Dungeon Saga, The Dwarf King's Quest, Dreadball Extreme, Mars Attacks, Dead Zone. So this is one thing, Dead Zone. They did Dead Zone. And then afterwards, they did Dead Zone Infestation. So they already had Dead Zone.
Now, I was actually going to say something about this when you said, when we were talking about The Walking Dead, about how they're not going to buy from stores. So I was going to say, but in a way, it could be good because it's like, you release that, it works, and then you know that it works, so you release it to the shops and then they do have a thing. Yeah. But what Mantic are doing, completely screwing people over and then releasing the next level.
Because you've established a customer base. Because I think, yeah, I was going to mention that exact point. So you've read my mind, Oscar. Because you're right. You get that, then you've got an initial base, so you can say to your retail channel, look, we've established this in the market.
Like the new game's coming out, it'll be available to buy at your local games.
Would you like to stock the expansions for it?
Exactly.
Now, Mantic try and get around this a little bit by actually having a reseller pledge, which contains distributor quantities of product, and each game will come with a Kickstarter exclusive, blah, 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 blah. Interestingly, only one backer. You have the retailer pledge, which you get 10 copies, and they do have 82 backers for that. So I suppose 820 copies of that. But, yeah, it's... I don't know. I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. It obviously works, because this is...
You know, it's just a bit sneaky, isn't it, really, when you're a big company like this?
It's putting the risk... For me, it seems counterintuitive, because it's putting the risk on the consumer. And companies kind of exist to take the risks that consumers can't.
Yeah.
And this is devolving it back down to us. So we're taking the company's risk for them, which doesn't feel right.
I mean, in a way, like, wargaming is very social, isn't it? You can't really play a wargame by yourself. So, I mean, and the whole point of having a store, I mean, it's really nice to go to a store and then you can chat to the people about the game. You can, like, go to, like you were saying, Matt, you know, where you can go and you can have a game with some other people, you can meet, like... new people, even. I mean, it's the whole point of having this kind of gamer community, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And part of it, even it goes beyond that, is the fact that, you know, you're coming in, you might see a cool paint job, and you go, how did you get that effect? And building that community there in this way here. And I also feel bad because, you know, anytime, let's say I've done it too, and my local game store cannot carry X and I have to order it online. And all of a sudden I show up in there and then they know I've gotten this online because they couldn't carry it or had such low quantities. They know I've gotten it online, but I'm like, this is the only place I can get it. So, but in a case like this, where it's a major line where they should be able to get it and there's not a distribution issue or some sort of limited quantity, that this should be hitting to the game stores and to be able to go ahead and purchase from there.
I mean, maybe this sort of retailer level thing is a good way to do it, because you know, you get 10 copies of the base game box and 10 of each unlocked Kickstarter exclusive miniature. So then a store could actually buy that sort of retailer pledge level. Then when somebody comes into the store, they could say, hey, you know what? Did you manage to get the, you know, I know you like zombie games and stuff. You have got Zombie Side. Did you see The Walking Dead? Oh yeah, I saw that, but I missed the Kickstarter. Ah, well actually, we've got a box here. And it includes all of those extra Kickstarter pledge bits, you know, for the same price or whatever. Now that's quite appealing then, I think, because that's giving back to the retailer in that way. Mm. Now retailers do generally buy up front anyway, or distribution, they have invoicing, all that kind of stuff, so it's kind of a normal model. But I don't know. I'm uncertain as to whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Something doesn't naturally sit with it, but then I don't know whether it is good or bad.
Now, I've seen it for other things where it's a company expansion and not just in games here, but I would be fine if, let's say, Mantic was doing some sort of, hey guys, we're going to do a series of Kickstarters, some fun things you can get from our company, but our main goal is to build an entirely new manufacturing system or some sort of expansion so it'll help us as a whole, but the risk is so high, we're going to try to see if we can subsidize part of that through Kickstarter with these rewards for backing us.
Yeah. So say if for example, Spartan said, hey, you know what? We'd like to make all of our Firestorm ships in plastic as injection molded kits, but that's going to require, you know, injection molding is a massive investment and we don't want to do that. And nobody buy them, because if we did, we'd go out of business and then you wouldn't have any spaceships at all.
Right.
What do you think, guys? You know, and then if enough people sort of commit to that and they have these same sort of retailer things as well. I don't know. You know, that feels, I suppose that feels more honest in a way, because it is just being upfront about, look, this is what we're thinking. You thinking the same thing?
The key point in there was, we'll go out, it'll ruin our company if we do. The thing is, like, is it? This kind of thing is for risky projects.
Yeah, rather than something like an existing franchise, which is currently very hot, which you know is going to work, generate a lot of money. Yeah. Yeah, interesting one. So, there we have it, The Walking Dead. You still have
4 days.
4 days to go, and $471,850 now.
So. Oscar, going back to you, for the in town here, we have Disney World and Universal Studios. Universal Studios has a Halloween event called Halloween Horror Nights they do every year for an extended period of time. Maybe the last 4 to 5 years, the whole thing's been themed Walking Dead, where all the streets are Walking Dead. There's at least one giant crazy house that's Walking Dead. So don't feel bad. It's everywhere in your face. And we're like, oh, can you guys be a little more creative and just rehashing the same stuff? But apparently not.
Apparently not. No, it's might as well if everyone likes it. I mean,
yeah.
I don't blame them for liking it. It's just, like you said, like, yeah, be a bit creative from time to time.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so we've got some other things that are here on Kickstarter. We've got, and this is one that I think is quite interesting. It's called Polyversal. It's a 6mm miniatures game system. And you think, well, so what? That's not particularly innovative. Now, the interesting thing about this one, and I think the big flawed part of this one, is it's a 6mm sci-fi mass combat miniatures game system. Great, you think, so it's epic. Epic Armageddon, yeah? Compatible with all 6mm miniatures. So, just let that one sink in a minute. So,
Okay. Essentially,
I guess what they're saying is, okay, we're going to make a set of rules that you can use anything with. Put you in command of an army set in a plausible future Earth intended for use with 1/300 scale 6mm miniatures. Now, if you can use any miniatures with this,
what does that say about their,
how are they going to make the money?
That is a very expensive rule book they're selling there.
Yeah, so I kind of don't get this. So let's have a look. What's the lowest pledge level they do? So they do the $1, the thank you. $20, PDF copy of the Polyversal rulebook, electronic copy of the rules. $25, you get a PDF copy. Oh. And it doesn't say why that's different.
The first one's a limited, so the first one's the first limited value. So if you can get the first set, and then it will push the second one. So as soon as that caps at 100, it will jump down to the next
one. Gotcha. But they've still got 63 out of 100, so they've got plenty left. Then $30, you get a printed copy of the rulebook. $35 is when that runs out. There's still 86 left, so...
And then...
$55, one copy of the box game. Without miniatures or combatant titles.
So it just has the
counters. So it's got dice, quick reference cards, counters.
I'm assuming that's when you use your own models.
You know, you see, $55 for a game without miniatures seems a lot.
It's like a trick. You open it up. Oh, right. Oh.
I mean...
Where's the fun in this?
Right, so $60 without miniatures.
I do like the fact that without is capitalized, just in case you weren't sure.
Now, here we go. $120 or more, which again is expensive. Right?
Yeah, it is.
One copy of the Polyversal box game set plus any stretch rewards. Now, it says the game set, but it doesn't really say... Oh, it has got some minis here.
What is the game set?
You see, this is it. It's a little bit...
It's tokens.
Okay... And then you've got some minis here as well.
They are quite, they're pretty cool, actually, the conceptual idea.
But, I mean...
Well, there's only three of them. It's easy to make.
Yeah, it's 6mm, right? So it's... I could make these on your printer. It's $25,000 backed out of 80,000, so it's about 30% funded so far. It's got 30 days to go. And I guess a lot of people are seeing the same thing, or rather not seeing what I'm not seeing. Why? I'm buying a set of rules.
Also, here, take a look. They've created five. How many of the other ones actually got fully funded? So they've created five game systems, or five projects.
Yeah. It doesn't say any. Well, 23 backed. I don't get that.
That's backed. It doesn't have to be theirs backed, apparently. So the created means how many they've posted up. So this is one of the five they've posted up that's currently in the process. And I don't know if those actually got funded or not.
It doesn't say... Oh... So,
successfully funded. So one of them, no, unsuccessful.
Funding unsuccessful. So I think the others maybe they were pulled because it doesn't say they were successfully funded.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't have a whole lot of confidence right now.
Yeah. 60 backers pledged $2,380 to help bring this project to life.
Okay.
Maybe it was. I don't know.
Hit the campaign button at the top and see, or lower middle thing next to updates. Guessing it did.
Oh.
Yeah, it did.
Well, it was a $500 goal, so not too hard.
Yeah, sorry, everyone listening at home, is we're like, well, what is this here?
Yeah, so, you know, great preparation. My bad. So, you know, I mean, $80,000, it's obviously ambitious because of what they're asking for compared to the $500 that they were asking for these other ones that they did fund. It seems the one that they asked for more on, they didn't actually... get funded at all.
I can understand where they're going, but...
So, this is something that I think... This is a good idea, right? A universal set of rules you can use with any minis. I've got all these epic minis, or I've got my 1/300 scale World War II army that I've got from GHQ or, you know, whatever, micro tanks. Hey, I can use all of these. Fantastic. But for me, I mean, any minis game, why do places like Spartan, why do places like Games Workshop exist... What do they make money on? They make money on minis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, even if you're making money on your rules, on your books, what actually drives the company, what pays the salaries and the heating and all of the making stuff is minis. And that's what this doesn't have. So they've created something which effectively just isn't suitable, as far as I can see, for Kickstarter. This is... You know, we're going to make this great system that you can use with anything. Go nuts. It's like, thanks, dudes. I'll pay my $20. I'll get my rules. And that's the last you'll ever see of me.
Yeah.
Because maybe I like your minis, maybe I don't. But I can buy them from anywhere, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but even the same thing here, it's like, sit down with a couple of your friends and make up the rules yourself.
Yeah.
For no models, no support, and picking up any models to play with, sure, hell, let's sit down and hammer this out over a month's time and we'll have something that we can enjoy to play with.
And you'll have $20 more in your wallet.
Yeah, and you can buy a crate of beer. So.
Right. I mean, come on. Talking about game talk and having beer at the same time and what you want to do for your own game system, I think people can get around that.
So this is an example. I mean, we've seen one example of something which was just terrible and misguided.
That wasn't even terrible and misguided. That was beyond.
Yeah. Just some weird guy playing out his hate on screen. Here we've got something where somebody's thought about it and they've created something.
And it could potentially work if just a few things were tweaked a lot.
Like models?
Yeah. Exactly. I think it goes back to something that we've talked about before in background. You know, what do Games Workshop do, or have they done in the past quite well, is world crafting. You know, they have created a universe which people are engaged in.
Do you know what they're quite good at as well? Oh, world destroying.
Oh.
Okay, world. I'm sorry, guys. Okay, I had to do that one.
Well played.
Fair play, yes. So they're good at creating worlds and then destroying them completely, yes.
But no, I do agree. The whole Warhammer universe is actually really beautifully made,
and they've got different factions. I mean, they've got fiction. They've got, you know, the Black Library, which puts out books which make money, right? They get on the New York Times bestsellers list. They have a universe that people want to engage in.
And they would do it at a time.
Something which is universal.
Way back at this point, they would do full releases for ranges and almost redo the entire range. So people would be there would be incentive to go ahead and purchase, replace, and update the models. So it looks like they've gotten rid of the older molds and replaced them with new ones in the past. But it doesn't seem they're doing that so much anymore. You have little of these micro releases with one model here, but really nothing else going on. But
with the Tyranids, when it'd be like, you know, you got all of those random, like the concept ideas for Tyranids, then it'd be like, they've released a model for this Tyranid you don't know what it looks like. And then you'd have a look at the model and it'd be great and everything. But now it's like they're just revisiting the old ones, aren't they, with those collector's edition kits.
Yeah. I mean, they're making money on that, right?
Oh, yeah, it's working.
Are they?
Well, they're making less money overall than they were. Right. They're making more per mini, but they're not selling as many minis.
Yeah.
But that's a slightly different thing because we're all really jaded with the way they are.
Yeah.
We're just sick of being milked. But, you know, they built these worlds, and you're right, they brought out these new ranges, but I think the way that they then did that was so brutally commercial that, you know, after six or seven iterations of Warhammer 40K, people are like, but I don't want to buy an entirely new army just because you've revisited the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I'd like to buy some new units, but I don't want all the old units I've collected to be suddenly invalid.
Codexes.
Yeah. But anyway, we're getting slightly distracted. The point is that they're good at creating these worlds and the themes that make you want to buy it. So let's talk about Task Force models that are in front of us. You know, I want to buy the Ralthosa models because they look really cool. They add to the existing models that I already have, build my force. You know, they'll do some cool things.
Well, same with the Directorate. Really.
Yeah. And if you're for the Aquans, you want the Aquans.
Mm.
So they've done that because they've engaged you already in the universe. You already have that identity. In a universal system, which can be used with any minis.
You're basically just saying,
by the nature of it, you don't have that.
I've made a game, so, but there's no universe to it. It's like, here's some rules that could be used for a game.
Yeah, or it's this universe and, you know, I mean, I think they actually do put it in.
It looks like it could have a really
Earth
cool
in 2130,
backstory.
You know.
Mm.
So they talk about sleek grav tanks and VTOLs and lumbering walkers. So you can put all this. Yeah, I guess you get your Robotech stuff and you can get your World War II minis and things. But is that cohesive? Does that feel like it's a game, or does it just feel like I brought all my minis and you brought all your minis and we're kind of hashing them together in some sort of blended thing? Mm. Like you said, Matt, that you could have come up yourselves.
Right. I mean, this is Age of Future Battles, so I mean, it's set to go. Games Workshop will come out with this version of the game here soon.
Yeah. So I think, again, Kickstarter is that window. And I think, like you said originally, Oscar, it gives you that platform that anybody can just go and say, hey, I've got a great idea on this. Well, sometimes it's not a great idea.
Exactly. And that's why it's here, because you don't want to say, I've got a great idea, spend tons of money on it, and it just not working.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side of that, yeah, the positive is, the guy hasn't spent $80,000. He hasn't gone to the bank, managed to convince them to give him $80,000, then he produces something that will lose him his house.
Yeah. So do we have a good example?
So, okay, that was that. Let's go to one that's then actually been already funded. So I don't know if this is a good example or not, but this is a steampunk miniatures game. It's called Twisted. It's actually, because it's in Australian dollars, it must be in Oz. Yep, in Melbourne. It's already funded, $91,278 of $25,000
goal. That's quite good.
And now, I'm not a big steampunk fan, so I'm probably the wrong person to actually... I know, terrible as it is, Matt. Thing so you is, maybe... Though,
you don't have any dystopian wars at your place?
I do. Well, no, I do.
Yeah, some...
Okay, all right. So there's some saving graces.
Yeah, but actually, they've got some miniatures here, and they look pretty nice.
They look very nice, actually.
Yeah, those are fairly good.
The guy in the purple, like that, just looking at a guy with like a big fancy Nouveau, coat on. He looks like...
The mysterious agent of the engine.
The detail on his coat is very impressive.
Yeah. So...
But again, I don't know what he's doing. He's just weird pose. Is he gliding down?
Is he gliding down, or has he burst out of these gears and things? I guess he's gliding down.
I kind of picture Mary Poppins coming down with a popped up little like
he's
skirt
here now.
He's got quite a cool sword, though. He's got a silly steampunk gun, if you like that kind of thing. But you know, they've got the factions, the Dickensians, the servants of the engine. So it looks like they've got two. So they've got resin miniatures. They've got some terrain there as well. They talk about what you get. So it looks very professionally put together. You know, they've got box art. They've got rule book art. You know, they've got stuff here which looks
good. Well, seeing this now compared to the other one we just looked at, I know I'm going back again, but it's like this was done like, you know, they knew what they were doing kind of thing. Like they had it all planned out properly. Like we got this backstory. You sort of have the story. You can't not buy the minis if you're going to buy the story. But they've shown you pretty much everything you're going to get.
Yeah. And they've got different types of builds. So, which is quite nice, I think. You know, you've got a pledge level that has two optional ways of building it.
The one with more boxes.
You know, and I think one of the things is that any Kickstarter, you have to present it. You know, this is your store window, right? This is how they're selling the game to you. It has to look good. It has to look professional. It has to sell it to you. And if you're not seeing that, like we didn't see in the prior one, why would you commit the dollars? Why would it entice you? You've got to have that hook, you know, and showing some nice minis is a good hook. It always is, you know, especially when we're all addicted to, you know, resin crack.
Well painted as well, and that always helps.
Yep, they've got physical minis which have been painted, which is, as you say, it's better than seeing renders, which are a bit ethereal. You don't know whether they're actually going to happen or not.
I would say this is even better, has a higher quality setup than the Walking Dead one.
Yeah,
I'd agree.
But the Walking Dead has the name with Walking Dead and Mantic, so I think it was easy sell on that one.
And they've got various stretch goals unlocked. And stretch goals is an interesting thing because everybody likes free stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I think stretch goals are a big part of the incentive for a lot of people.
I love stretch goals. Like, we've done the banks with stretch goals and it's exciting to look and just think, like, come on. And then I'll be like, yes, when you've got that stretch goal that you really wanted.
And this is the great thing about crowdfunding, right? Is because you see it and it's just like, oh, if only 3,000 people are backing at the moment. If we get to 3,200, that would be enough to get that next stretch goal that I really want. So I'm going to go and tell all my friends about it. You know, I'll tell my local gaming group. I'll put it on these forums. I'll put it on Facebook. So that's how you spread the kind of word. It's a social engineering project. So, I mean, even I'm looking, I don't particularly like steampunk, but I'm just looking at this stretch goal and thinking, actually, Trevor the Rat looks quite cool.
So I do have to ask you about, and you brought up the idea on stretch goals, and you guys have done a lot more backing than I have. So, Alex, have you ever gone on and go, well, I kind of hope we hit that stretch goal, so I'm going to buy this little extra bit to kind of push that almost like chance of it going up a little bit further?
No. And...
Okay.
Well, this...
Because it is a bit of a trap there.
Yeah, I can see the incentive of actually doing that.
You have that gambling mentality of, man, if I just add that a little bit more, there's a chance I can get it.
No, I'm too tight.
You say that, but we just backed on you forever.
Well, no, I'll do the usual gamer self-justification, right? So if I see it and I want it, then I will justify it to myself on spending the dollars. Now, and that'll be it for me. I would kind of like be, oh, well, maybe it's a bit more, a bit less. I will be then exactly what I just said about the social stuff. I'll go to the various like Facebook groups that I'm members of, gaming groups and stuff, and I'll say, hey, have you seen this? Do you like this kind of stuff? If you do, this looks really good. I've backed it. I put my money where my mouth is. I think you guys, if you like this kind of stuff, you know, you could too. Because I could add $10 to my pledge, but if they're doing the same pledge as me, which is $100, that's double. So you're getting more bang for your buck, and you're more likely to get that stretch goal. So it's doing the same thing, I guess, but using other people's money.
Hey, that's a smarter way of doing it. You had a pyramid scheme going on with Kickstarter. Well done.
Yeah, because I'm just looking at this one now. It's, what, 89,000? No, 91,000. It's gone up, yeah. So 91,000. I'm just looking at these stretch goals. They've got quite a lot of stuff here. And the next one at 95,000 is Tinkerbell. Ah, yeah. So now, if I was a steampunk fanatic, then this is really nice.
The detail is amazing.
If I was into this kind of stuff, I would think, actually, you know, that's $4,000 more. That's not that many people. And if I can reach out, because I've got that sort of, you know, the social media makes all these kind of groups international, so I don't have to have that many search points to make it, you know, expand out quite a lot.
And then the next stretch goal is like some...
The Egyptians expansion.
Yeah, and they're almost there.
Yeah, because that's only $9,000.
Again, in a way, you could argue that these are the extra expansion packs that the store could be selling, which these games are sort of...
110, you get the Irken Shrike. I quite like that.
See, there you go.
Yeah, see, it's a dangerous route. Very dangerous.
But see, you have this problem that this is cool, but you ask, is there a way I could get a beta run of the rules so I can get a feel? And you're doing the pre-purchase of this game, this full-on game that goes, this looks great. I did this with Deep Wars, and I would like this. There's a lot of theme stuff in here that I really like. What happens if I've now spent a significant fortune on it, a significant part of my gaming budget on this for whatever month range that I'm going to be doing, and all of a sudden I get these and go, okay, I got some cool minis, but this game is bad.
It's that gamble again, isn't
and,
it?
So gotta... Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess that then comes into the credibility of who's actually making this. You know, because if you've got somebody, so say, and I think you've just sent us a link.
I did. I don't know if we want to talk about them, but they have something in there that is really, really strong for a Kickstarter.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think this is a good one to talk about, because this is a Drop Fleet Commander, right?
Yes, it is.
Because I would go to use the example of Andy Chambers. So Andy Chambers doesn't work for, I don't think he actually has a job with them, anyway, a games company. He used to work for Games Workshop, used to be one of the main rule designers, so he has that provenance, so you know he knows what he's talking about when he's talking about rules, if you like Games Workshop rules. So if he's going to be backing a project, which you've got some relative certainty that, you know, I used to like BFG rules, if he's going to be involved with it, then I'm probably going to like it. So already my barrier to actually getting into this is lowered, because I've got that bit of confidence that actually this will probably be good.
This link that you just sent us destroyed its pledge target.
Yeah, yeah. So they wanted £40,000. They got £629,222.
But I also consider this an expansion and not just a new startup, because they already had, you know, the Drop Fleet Commander is based off of Drop Zone Commanders, but it's the space version.
Yeah,
so it's already a set world, set lore, and this is expanding into, yes, a new game system, but it's like saying it would have been like Spartan Games, Firestorm to Planetfall. If you scroll all the way down, you end up with several videos towards the bottom of this whole thing. It's a very, very large piece where they're covering like how to play, or, you know, Drop Seat Commander week one, part two, part one, and coming on through, and it talks about the orbital assaults and different mechanics they have in here. So one of the neat things they've done in this all the way down, there we go. There's a series of videos done by, I think that, is that Dogs of War guy? I can't remember. Beasts of War, whatever.
Beasts of War, yeah.
Yeah, so he's in there doing it, and they got the whole green screen going on. So they have a very nice professional setup to go ahead and do videos on gameplay. So right here, as you already pointed out, this is already established company. It's almost cheating to go ahead and do this, but this is a huge selling factor of how is the gameplay? What does this do? You know, I think of some of the guys that go ahead and do the board game reviews and do the how to play. just really, really good to sell these ideas.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing, actually, that Hawk have always done well. Dave, I think, has always been very good at pushing the sort of social side and the presence of Hawk, more so to me, actually, than the gameplay, because when we actually bought Drop Zone Commander, we weren't that impressed, were we?
It was a little disappointing, to say the least. But one thing, again, yeah, like you say, the social side, like they always do really impressive art.
Yeah, and there's a huge amount of stuff here. I mean, the reason it took so long to actually get those videos was there are lots and lots, I mean, literally dozens and dozens of renders. There are actual ships painted up.
And they look so from, cool, though.
Well, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pictures of the same ship, different angles, painted one. And then you've got a whole bunch of renders, so...
Now, see, that, but they do that for artwork. A lot of the times for design for artwork, we'll get that. I do wish we had that more for Spartan Games, of having the all the different angles so we could see every ship involved. We're starting to get a little bit better with them, but this is really what you need to have for having a good idea of what a model looks like.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it. I mean, nice paint schemes. You know, it's just really... This is proper marketing. You know? Lots and lots of that. All the different stretch goals, you know, they've got t-shirts, more renders.
Concept ideas.
They've got, these are quite nice, little resin cluster packs, industrial sectors, commercial sectors, like little towns and cities and stuff.
Because their setting is really not space, it looks like it's going to be planetary invasion. So a lot of their maps are just like satellite views of the planet almost, where you're flying in low orbit over the planet and doing engagements there.
Yeah. And then you have all these fighters and bombers, torpedoes. You've got those in render form and in model form. So, yeah, this is a really nicely put together. You've got some artwork.
Which is really nice.
Yeah.
That's
various maps. You know, so very professionally put together. But then this is a professional company, so you would expect that to be the case. The other thing that I've noticed as well, and this is actually something that we did do, here we've got late backer pledge. So I can go ahead, knowing that this game is funded, and I can just click this little button, and here we go, register here for the late backer pledge.
Ah.
So I can go there, register here, then...
So how many times have you done this, Alex?
Now, well, let's move on to the ones we've done then. So one of the ones that we did on the late backer pledge was the others, Seven Sins.
I'm so excited for this game.
So this is by Cool Mini or Not.
Which is a brilliant website.
Who do the Zombicide series of games. So, you know, again, when you were saying... Is this going to be a good game or not? I know nothing about this game. Do we?
No.
We absolutely know nothing about it.
It's called Seven Sins.
I just saw it as a late pledge thing. You know, this thing is funded. If you missed it, you know, here you go. It made a lot. 10,000 backers, $1.46 million. And if we just have a look at some of the stuff.
These models are nice.
Yeah, so we purely went on the basis of the models.
And the fact that they made Zombicide as well.
Yes. So, what I was saying before, the barrier to entry, you know, it's Cool Mini or Not. We know the quality of the minis from the Zombicide games.
We
know the quality of the kind of gameplay is really fun. So, again,
that
assurance
that models,
A, they're going to do it, B, they're going to do it well, and C, it will be a good game.
And then we looked at the models and it got better.
Yeah. So... I mean, this is basically a fairly apocalyptic game.
Apocalyptic, Cthulhu,
yeah,
bad
lots
things
of twisted,
happening.
Horrible, disgusting creatures.
I mean, like,
I love everything about it.
Representing the seven deadly sins, obviously.
That kind of thing's always intrigued me, like, the seven sins, kind of that kind of thing. So, coming down one day and Dad, you just going, like, well, if you've seen this, what's it about? So it's like, a game on the seven sins with models to represent each one. It's like, yes, please.
Yeah, because I think I showed you the render for
the apocalypse,
for death,
yeah.
Didn't I? Yeah, on the apocalypse extra, the optional buy, which I did go for.
Yeah, there you go, that's...
But again, you know, if you look at the layout of this, it's very professionally done. They've got renders, they've got actual models, they've got boards, you know, all the little bits. So, again, it reassures you that it's going to be a good quality product. It shows exactly what you're getting. You know, very nicely laid out.
I also like the fact that when you get to Lust, it's not a sexy girl in no outfits. They're horrible, scary, mutated sort of looking abominations of like, oh. Now, but also you have here, like, this is a very adult game as far as just like the level of horror detail. You probably don't want to have this around your little kids. But maybe that's just me.
No, I can understand.
Oh, Esther would probably like it.
Well, yeah, but
My youngest daughter used to play with our Tyranid models. So we used to have some mycetic spores, some Forgeworld mycetic spores,
and there'd be
then spore mines,
the mummy spores, and the baby
and she
spores.
Used to call them the mummy and the darlings.
Well, see, now that's actually a question, because you have a lot of girls that find certain models interesting. You have them like Tyranids. You'll have them like other weird monsters. My wife likes Bone Griffins from Uncharted Seas, and you're just like, there's all these like real pretty and nice aesthetics, but you want the Tyranids, you want the monsters, you want the creepy stuff. Why do the girls gravitate to that? So obviously the nuns with guns are not the primary demographic for the female gamer.
That's my dad. He loves the nuns with guns.
Yeah, although they both died, didn't they?
They did, yes. Nicholas. We read up about Nicholas, and he's got the most creepy backstory.
Oh, yes.
So yeah. We can't go into backstories right now, we'll...
So for the listeners, what was the name of this one again?
So this is The Others, Seven Sins. I don't know whether you can still late back it. I mean, we late backed it quite a while ago. I think it's probably it's closed now. But again, the late backing thing, you know, it's kind of, this is funded. You know, we've done it, it's closed. But if you missed it, hey, you don't have to miss it. You can actually late pledge.
Which in a way, a bad point, screws the shop owners like... even more so, because it's like, oh, the Kickstarter end is, no, I can still late back this. It's like,
yeah, yeah. So again, I don't know where that sits, really, in the grand scheme of things, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, obviously for us as consumers, it's good, because, I mean, full confession, guys, we don't have a friendly local gaming store.
No, we don't.
Anyone anywhere near us. So that makes it difficult. All of our purchases really have to be online. So we're forced into that anyway. So we're not screwing anybody over if we do this. No, perhaps we should stop, but we might feel differently. So yeah, it's a difficult one. I don't know really.
It is difficult. It's very difficult.
What else you guys have up there? Do you have anything that's fairly recent or a newer edition of something that seemed pretty cool?
So the one that we did do, the one that we've actually done the largest pledge on.
Not going into any details.
Is Cthulhu Wars Onslaught 2.
Oh. Well, it's annoying because we backed this last year and it's like, great, when's it coming? Ah, September next year. And it's like, oh, for God's
So we bought Cthulhu Wars, the original one, retail, and really enjoyed the game. Great minis. And when we'd only been playing it, I don't know, a week or a couple of weeks or something, when Onslaught 2 came out and we went through it and it's like, yeah, we've got to get it. Yeah. Now, as far as I know, there are no outlets for this in the UK at all. I don't even know if it's available generally.
This is a direct order only for, from what I understand, for this. And I'm looking at the late backers sign up. I'm like, if I had $700 extra sitting around right now that I wasn't going to Adepticon and worried about all the other stuff, because this one was one that I was like, man, I really need to get my hands on it, because the base game's fairly costly. It's not a cheap game, and you're getting big models in here.
We opened the box, and we were like, Jesus Christ, the rest of this box is for minis.
Yeah.
Minis.
I got to ask, how fast does this game play? Like, is this a slow-going game? Are you looking at hours? Are you looking at something that's fairly fast-paced? Really? Yeah,
but there are lots of different ways you can play, actually. All of the factions play completely differently.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the things that the Onslaught 2 does is it brings in some new factions. It also brings new maps to play and also different ways to play. So it's going to expand.
And neutral factions, which screw both of you over.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. And it did really well in its funding. There's a lot of... separate upgrades.
I think we fell out a couple of times trying to fight over great old ones in this.
Yeah, so...
Do you have to choose them in there, or do you get all... No, like, because there's some really amazing ones.
We went whole ham on this.
Shh, Mum doesn't know.
Yeah, but for this one here, this one looks like you really get your money's worth. I mean, this one is really impressive on... Now, okay, we've been kind of harping on the fact that established companies and going against it, but this is a fairly small one as far as companies go, because, I mean, I don't think they had really anything else besides this one game, and this is how they got it out in the first place. I don't have a problem at all with a successful board game, because board games can be expensive, and this is a way to do it where... this is affordable for you to really go in and support the guy. So hopefully getting a next generation in 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. And actually, you know, you mentioned it's an expensive board game, which it is, right? It's, well, I think on here you can get, yeah, $150. So I think normal retail is $200. So, although actually we picked up our copy for 150 after the, so it was £100.
Yeah.
Including postage, I think. And it's a big box. It weighs like 6.5 kilos, which is, you know, what, 15 pounds? you get a lot of stuff in there. And obviously, we played the board game. It's a fun game. But also, we're going to use the minis, and we've used the minis for
Strange
Aeons. You know, if you're playing anything which has a Cthulhu element in, you've got minis in there that you can use. So actually, if you're just buying it for the minis... Actually, if you take $150 and look at what you're getting in the game, if you were to buy similar minis from just, you know, straight minis companies, you would spend more than $150 on just the minis. So, yeah, it's an expensive board game, but actually, you know, again, I'm doing the gamer justification here. It's quite good value, right?
You'd be like, Dad, weigh all of the models and then weigh what you're getting, turn it into cost. But like what Matt said, like it does make me quite happy actually when like a project that, like you said, they're quite small, they didn't really have anything else from this. When it goes really well for them, it's sort of just like, see, that's something that worked and they sort of did it from nothing.
Yeah. And you can't buy this in the shops. It's not screwing over retailers because they can't get it.
This is like Kickstarter gold kind of thing, isn't it?
I'm even at their site trying to find out how much does this game sell, you know, from them, and I don't even see you can buy it from them right now.
Yeah.
Something's going
on. I reckon.
So, yeah, this is a good deal. So if magically I come in a couple extra $100, I will be joining you on the big full purchase in this one, because this one I can see – because this would be a very smart investment as I'm paring down already right now for a move, because I just need more miniatures and models I have to explain to my wife that we need storage for.
Well, if you're planning a move, the perfect time would be to get it. If you plan to move in September, which is when this Kickstarter actually spits out its stuff.
Oh, perfect. I move in August.
Yeah, so there we go. Brilliant. When you moved, it's like, hey, I found these old boxes. I wonder what's in them. Weren't they just delivered a couple of days ago? No, you must be mistaken.
I think we're not getting boxes, we're getting like a crate or something.
That is the one thing I do worry about is
how it's going to get delivered.
And
so, Alex, that means you have to figure out the romantic weekend, all the stuff she wants to do, all the nice little things leading up to this. So your August needs to be planned out now. How you're going to go ahead and do this in the prime through August and early September. So you sweeten her up and she's really happy with you. So when this shows up, you're like, but I've just been so good to you. How could you be upset about this?
Yeah. Plus it's all paid for already. Right. So
there you go.
Yeah. Well, our wedding anniversary is in August. So that's a good plan, Matt.
I do my little things that I can. Sometimes they're not good ideas, but Alex, you know this already.
Excellent. Yeah. So, I agree. I think if you've got a company like this, which actually really only exists to create this game, and it's not something that is, you know, a retail store would probably not stock anyway. Yeah. Because, yeah, you're right, a couple of $100 for a board game, is it going to shift that? It's a fairly niche thing. I mean, Cthulhu is quite a niche thing, I guess, anyway. I think it should be much, much wider. I think the success of it could be
everyone great. Thinks I'm crazy when I'm like, hey, that's like Cthulhu, and everyone looks at me like I'm some kind of, like I've spoken a different language. It's like, oh yeah, sorry, I forgot none of you are nerds. But it's like,
well, actually you've done some of your art and design work with
yes, my graphics project. I had to make a beachside cafe. I called it Cafulu. So teacher loved it.
I would go there.
Yes, first customer.
And I think you're doing your art as well on
monsters.
Yeah, so
I can link them in somewhere.
I'm actually looking at Cthulhu Wars on just Google Images and seeing people who've painted up the models. As an avid painter myself, I would be excited just on painting these models. These are very, very good models.
They are. You painted some of your cultists, and they are really nice how you've done book. All of the little writing the characters. Inside the book.
Okay, so, I mean, there are a few Kickstarters on here at the moment with minis. We mentioned Twisted. I've just picked out a few others. Yeah, so we've got, one, two, three, four minis games that are on here as well. One is Trazorites, which...
Well, from first look, there's a Roman soldier and a Velociraptor, so I'm a little bit confused.
Dinosaur-mounted warriors, sun magic casters, packs of attack lizards, and more for our 32mm fantasy skirmish miniature game.
And it's not a Games Workshop game.
It's not a Games Workshop game. They're only asking for $9,500. They've got 2,500 of that with 20 days to go.
I have to have a look.
And they've got some interesting art. Oh, and they've got some...
It looks like
traditionally sculpted miniatures. So not CAD, from the looks of it. And actually, they look pretty good. Some concept sketches.
It's not bad. I mean, this is where you're looking at a startup and you're seeing what they can give you for it compared to some of the other ones we've seen.
Yeah.
And this is what I would expect from a game startup. But then again, you're also looking at a high risk. What is this going to be? Is this going to be good enough to go ahead and warrant going with it?
Especially when they're only looking for $9,500.
Right. What am I getting? A total of like 5 32mm models. And does it have it in here with a top end? So for $600, I can receive one of each of the miniatures?
As well as one of each miniature currently produced by DGS Games. That's at least 98 models. Oh, so this is an existing company, however small it might be.
All right, good to know.
So they've created 5. Yeah, they've got a website here. Okay, so if dinosaur-mounted warriors are your thing, and you've never been able to find a game that satisfies that need, Trazorite Crusaders is the one. Next, we've got Aetherium House Ikaru, which has a very strange robot squid thing.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about Skeletor robot squid hand.
With a bit of Cylon in there.
Right, his left arm is bone. He has a rib cage. He has some sort of like intestinal carapace thing. A bunch of cybernetics and a cyclopsy Cylon thing with tentacle hand.
Yeah, it's a real collection of stuff, isn't it?
I heard he works.
It's like one of those games where you have the piece of paper, you fold it into lots of different things, then it's like, oh, I'll draw the feet and then fold it up, you draw the legs.
It does look a bit like that, yeah. But it's funded. He's asked for 5,000, they've got 9,000.
What do they offer then?
399. Let's see.
They offer Outer Glow text.
So this is the Aetherium. It's an expansion. So this is just an expansion. So this is one, so I guess House Ikaru.
I suppose it is the...
It's a faction for an existing game that I've not heard of. Aetherium. A 32mm skirmish level strategy game based in a world between worlds. So again, I guess this is the... this is a bit of the Mantic Games thing, isn't it? We're expanding an existing game. We're going to get the commitment from our customers before we actually go into making it. So again, not sure how I feel about that kind of thing. Why not just produce the faction and see how it sells? That would be the traditional.
Yeah.
To me, it's almost like we're not confident that we've produced a good enough faction. We don't believe in it enough that we think we're going to make our money back on it. So let's test the waters before we actually make it, which doesn't seem the right way that company... should behave. Well, but maybe that's just my traditional view. I don't know.
It's weird because if you actually go to their website, it just talks about their Kickstarter. I don't see an option for like the base game, the root game. So I'm kind of weirded out when I go to their actual website on what's going on. There's a Living Errata. There's a forum. They got the Kickstarter. Here's the catalog. But maybe that's what they mean.
Yeah.
So this is a little...
Okay, so we'll move on from there. Okay, and then we have Lands of Ruin, hybrid tabletop gaming as it should be. Well, let's see. Should it be like this?
They've almost got their goal. They've got £6,471, sorry, out of their £7,000.
Yep, so they're almost there. 13 days to go, so this is probably going to get funded. So this is a tabletop game where your tablet replaces rule books, character cards, stat sheets, and pen and paper calculations.
I'm interested.
So this is sort of an evolution into the more digital age. So here we go. Companion tablet app, Android and iOS, called the Command Console, allows for more rapid gameplay, while simultaneously introducing a level of depth and realism that cannot be achieved in other game systems. Now, there was a game a while ago called Deus Irae, something like this. It was a fantasy game, which tried to do the same thing, but it was, obviously, tablets hadn't been invented when they did it, I don't think. So it was based on PC. And they produced really, really detailed models, really nice models that I sold. Because I was actually interested in the gaming board, because they produced a gaming board with it, a modular gaming board, which I also sold in the end. Actually, I sold both for more than I paid for the game in the first place. Yeah, so it was a good investment. And the software, which I still have, because nobody wanted it. So I don't know. Is mobile technology, are apps what people want in games?
Well, Games Workshop believes it is. Do you guys use a mobile tablet for in your gaming?
No.
and Alex, I think before this, you even mentioned you are a techie guy. You like all your gadgets and gadgets.
I do. And I am the sort of nerd that will produce an Excel sheet to analyze factions and stuff. But when I'm at the gaming table, I've got my stats, which are printed off. Yes, I'll use an army generator program to make sure I've got my points and stuff, because I don't want to spend my time writing down and scribbling stuff. But once I've got that, I've got my minis, I've got my dice, it's old school,
Okay, I got to ask Oscar, because you are the newer generation, you're the youngest one here. What do you think? Or if you could have the stuff digitally, you don't have to answer what your dad answers. So, give us an honest answer here.
Well, I was just about to say that...
because if I don't like it, I can edit it out, so...
That's... Yeah, oh, great. There you go, then. You're an odd one, like, Dad, just saying. I really like this idea, because, in movies you see all the commanders, they've got all their, light pads or whatever. I really like the idea of playing a game, that sort of being that commander or general or whatever, if you've got all your stuff on a tablet and stuff, that really just kind of makes stuff interesting. I mean, I do like stuff that's printed out on paper. I do like having the books in front of me and like having the actual thing. But this is actually really good, because if you have to change stuff, when your crew points go down, etc., and you have to maybe sometimes scribble out on the sheet and stuff, it would be easier just to maybe minus a number or something, just quickly press a button.
Yeah, I can see. I mean, one of the things here they're putting is complex game mechanisms handled by the app, AI-controlled NPCs, and hidden characters and secret activity. That's quite interesting, because that is an element that isn't easy to recreate in a tabletop game. And it also, I guess, gives you the option of solo gaming a bit more.
Having
an opponent. But then are you getting almost into PC gaming? Would you just go and play Fallout 4 instead?
Yeah, exactly. Whereas, I mean, Zombicide, I know you're not really meant to play it alone, but that has AI controlled, I suppose you can say, because the zombies just run towards you. But I mean, it's difficult to recreate an intelligent creature or person or something in a tabletop game, really, that isn't controlled by a person.
What do you think, Matt?
So this is interesting. So first off, that third thing there, the hidden characters and secret activity, that there in itself was a neat concept, where you might not have something that you wouldn't be able to normally get. But the other ones there would focus more towards the gamer that wants the immediate now. And I know quite a few of those gamers who enjoy video games, but, will lightly go ahead and play into war games. And I think I am the very much in-depth story person. I love my complicated games. I got rid of my Robotech starter kit because I'm like, the model stuff.
I've heard that before as well. So.
And that's actually my selling. I was like, this is such a neat universe. I really like it. And it's gone. but the whole, as I'm still having, Cthulhu Wars up open on my other screen. I'm looking and gaping at the models I'm scrolling down. But having something that can do the advanced complicated elements, even for simple games, I consider Firestorm still a fairly simple game. I could see some of my friends wanting something that just simplifies it all so they don't have to do anything. Because there are the very, very casual gamers that again, go to the games, and I'm not going to knock it, but it is simplified, like X-Wing or, you know, Armada or, you know, Attack Wing. So all those very simple, pre-painted, very low-end semi-war games.
Yeah, I think I can see it in terms of, like you said, Oscar, having the stats there and, you know, okay, you got damage, got my hull points off. That's quite nice and dynamic. I'm not, you know, and then maybe like you say, Matt, okay, now I want to fire at you. What's going to be my attack dice pool? Because I've got, you know, a squadron of four cruisers. One's got two damage. This one's got one damage. This one's got three damage. This one's impeded. And okay, oh, I've got Terrans and they've got turrets on them all as well. So I've got, you know, three cruisers, but I've got six weapon systems and I've got damage on a couple. Rather than having to spend some time working out what that dice pool is, it'll just tell me, you know, automatically. Right. And it won't get it wrong, because if I'm calculating it, I can make a mistake. So it takes that kind of element out.
But, you know, I'm also the same guy who still has a BlackBerry, so obviously I'm not using a tablet.
Well, there had to be somebody. So.
Right, they have to stay in business somehow. Oh,
So it's an interesting concept. But yeah, for me, I think we spend a lot of time on tablets and phones and screens.
Oh, you're doing
anyway.
The dad thing again.
I am. The other thing is, if I forget to charge my tablet, I can't play the game.
No, that's true.
I go to the gaming club, oh, I'm on 3%. Is anybody going to charge it? No. I'm out for the night.
And I know what you mean. It's sort of like,
yeah, that's it.
I come off my technology, my PC or whatever, so that I can come and have a good face-to-face game, like a challenging game with you.
Yeah. And you're engaging with the person.
Yeah,
not
exactly. Not
sitting across from somebody who's got a screen, which can be fine if that's what you're doing, but it's kind of, this is almost not. It's half and half. So I don't know. I think there are possibilities for it. It'll be interesting to see how it goes. Okay, they're almost there, so we'll be interested to see how it pans out.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. 13 days ago, they should be able to get that, hopefully.
Yeah, 500. I mean, it's not much, is it? So it's an interesting concept. However, going to the actual game and the minis, I must say it's not grabbing me.
I don't understand why there's a guy with just like a straw hat and a chainsaw and there's an assault rifle guy. And the assault rifle guy hasn't shot him yet, but they're still running towards him.
I mean, some of these are nice minis, but some of them conceptually I just don't like.
Like, I like those people with
these guys are sorry,
the
okay.
gas masks.
Except for the guy on the left, he's like the, I don't know if you guys ever saw the show, it's definitely a little bit older, was it American Gladiator, where they shot people with the giant Nerf sort of weapons way back in like the 80s?
No.
Okay.
We had Gladiators, but it was a UK version, so we didn't have the giant Nerf gun.
Yeah, they like shoot him with giant Nerf guns. That guy's crossbow looks like he has a giant Nerf bullet at the end. So that's like those Office Wars that it's like, yeah, no, I got you, buddy.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, so I'm not loving the minis, I must say.
This would be something if someone else bought this and said, hey, Matt, you want to get a game in a couple beers? Okay, sure.
It looks like it could be like fun, you know.
Okay, go back up the next setup there. So this guy has some sort of like slave collar. These other guys look like they're suicide bombers chained up. Right? Am I seeing that right?
Mulciber. Bellings. Yeah.
I think you are.
He's like a gladiator with electro prod or something, isn't he?
Yeah, that's a bad life.
He's a Balian slaver, the only merchant class within the tribe. His main purpose of becoming a warrior was so that he could select his stock firsthand from the battlefield. Yeah, so he is. You're right. The others are all guys chained up with dynamite strapped to them. They're directorate, aren't they?
Yeah. See, these guys just look like your average kind of...
Right, but there's something slightly...
I'm just going to say the guy with the riot shield.
And these, they look like they're wearing wellies underneath their armour for some... They're just not quite there for me. Placement of his goggles makes that look very odd.
Tell you what this reminds me of, it's the film Nine.
Yes. Yeah, the animated film. Yeah.
To be quite honest, I really, really liked that, actually, and I thought it conceptually it was very good.
And again, I mean, these are very nice paint jobs.
But he kind of has this weird thing on with his gag in his mouth. I don't know.
I was going to say, I mean, it's a very nice paint job on this guy.
He's just
but
creepy.
He still looks a bit off to me. And I'm thinking,
it's his hands.
If he's got that kind of paint job, which I couldn't hope to achieve, what's he going to look like with my very average paint job? Probably bad. So for me, I wouldn't be backing this purely because the minis are just not doing it for me. Oh, also that looks, yeah, and the plastic resin, whatever it is, looks quite greasy and.
Oh yeah, no, I would. It's resin. This is a pass.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should have done hit and miss on the Kickstarters.
Next time around, 3 months from now, we'll hit and miss Kickstarters. Yeah. Hey, guess what? Copyright infringement one.
And then we have final one, which is quite interesting because this is Terrain. So this is Awakening Gaming Terrain by Awaken Realms, who I seem to recognize that name. Anyway, they are funded £12,255 for 5,000 gold. Still 15 days to go. So if you want to get some crazy looking terrain, you can do that. So they're talking about new quality in gaming terrain, amazing design, breathtaking details, affordable price. Now, I think what they're doing here, because you do have a lot of Games Workshop minis, is they're demonstrating their terrain in use in various.
Yeah, but they're showing their models in another game, in another company's photographs. So I don't know. We're getting to a really gray area on copyright infringement, because if they're trying to make money off this and they're displaying someone else's property in there.
Yeah, but it's Games Workshop. We're a big, nice, friendly company and never go after people.
I heard they're good about that stuff, so we'll just leave it be.
Oh, dear. So they do sort of objective markers and stuff. So here they go. They've got some crystals.
Oh, LED.
LED crystal markers.
That makes it all better.
Man, I need these in space. They need to be on the asteroids.
They do.
So they're quite cool.
They're quite big, actually.
Yeah, those are larger than I thought they would be.
£8 for three. That's quite reasonable.
Yeah.
Demonic Wasteland. You get 6 objective markers, 3 totems, 2 portals, 4 barricades, 1 tower.
I think the portals are quite cool.
I see the portals I like least.
But everything else is just chained bits of rock.
Yeah. I mean, the whole stuff isn't really doing it for me.
The totem's pretty cool. I mean, it's a totem.
Lava gates, lava chains.
They've made the cardinal sin, which we always take the make out of Games Workshop. Totem looks okay. Yeah, you see, sculpted fire.
Sculpted fire, indeed.
So for that reason, it's pass.
Hey, more lava bases. I've never seen lava bases before. Yeah, right? This is entirely new.
Steampunk Tesla.
Oh, no.
Now here they've sculpted electricity. So bad, bad choice. I don't think these look good.
See, if you cut, like, the portals, if you cut all of the stuff around it, so you just had the door with that weird kind of blue, like that, you know, that would look pretty cool, actually, as a gateway.
Well, why didn't they do this gateway, the sort of vortex piece, in clear acrylic and have, you know, an LED base that then lit it up?
Good question. Someone wasn't thinking this one through.
Yeah. I think what you said, Matt, this isn't innovative in any way. This is, look, I've made some terrain, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
The only thing I do like here is they have a rotating, I guess, GIF that allows you to go ahead and cycle through a series of images. But they have next to it is in centimeters and inches, just showing you size and scale to hopefully give you an idea of what you're looking at.
Yeah, that is a nice feature. That is.
Oh, floating crystal bases.
Then you've got sci-fi.
Oh, objective markers.
These, which
we can't even see these.
Have been unlocked.
Oh, that's not anything, is it?
No.
No, it doesn't even look like, you know, a Relics Games video game concept of what a robotic space pharaoh's building would look like.
No, nobody said the word Necron, obviously. It's
nothing that hasn't been done before.
Yeah. And this is the other thing, isn't it, of Kickstarter. You know, because you can do anything, you don't have to be innovative.
Yes.
Which, to me, it kind of dilutes the whole franchise.
Which is why it's better when you find something good.
But then you do have to sift through the crap find these, you know. And do I want to do that? Do I want to sift to try and spend money on something that I don't know whether it's going to be
maybe
happening?
That's a good thing in a way, because you're sifting and then you're like, oh, I give up, and then you end up saving money.
Yeah. Well, that's one way to look at it. But I think the ones that I've actually, all the Kickstarters that we've backed, I think I've seen on other things. I haven't been trawling through Kickstarter for, hey, what can I spend my money on?
Mm.
It's been a link through somewhere else, right, or a game. It's caught my interest and then I've gone through. Like with Cthulhu Wars, we already had Cthulhu Wars. We got into that through Strange Aeons already, looking for Cthulhu miniatures.
Yes, we did.
We weren't looking on Kickstarter. The others, we saw the minis. Wow, what are these? Got to get into this. Oh, Kickstarter's closed. Oh, but wait, you can do a late pledge. Bang, we're in. So I don't know. How often do you visit Kickstarter,
Matt? I occasionally get on to look for something, but it's more to see. And a lot of the times, it's not like even the current projects. It might be I jump on Kickstarter, do a couple random searches. What has gone through that I totally didn't even know about? And that's complete, then can I find it somewhere else and purchase it because it's already locked down? So sometimes it's not a bad way to even look at stuff. I mean, I guess I'm doing it backwards, but sometimes you don't catch them when they're live and you have no idea. So you're looking at them going, well, what about this when this comes to retail? Yeah. Maybe I'll snag it then.
I mean, Kickstarter, I think, as a general concept, and I guess that's what we can kind of wrap up with is, you know, is Kickstarter a good thing? I think generally Kickstarter is a very good thing. The projects I've seen which are really good, though, aren't necessarily in the gaming fraternity. I've seen some very good projects for everyday stuff, you know, personalized in-ear headphones, you know, that actually have the shape of your ear canal.
That's very cool.
So they fit perfectly. You know, just very clever ideas. I mean, I didn't fund that because it was horrifically expensive, but but the concept is really good, you know. And that was funded, and they'll get their money, and they'll go to retail and all that, and maybe it'll get cheaper. So the really good ideas I've seen on Kickstarter have predominantly been outside of our field. For gaming, is it a good thing?
I would say no. And the reason I'm going to say that is it's going to hurt retailers in the end, and then all the best games we've seen on here are already pre-existing game companies. And I haven't seen anything that's helping their facilities or infrastructure as a whole. It's just a quick pre-sell on the video games, on the miniature game industry.
That's reasonable. But there is some good. I mean, I suppose, like Matt just said, the bad sort of outweighs the good in a sense. But I mean, things without Kickstarter, Cthulhu Wars, we would never have heard of that and probably never have got it. And there are certain games which we could never get, sort of that. Like the Kickstarter sort of helped us. It's been a sort of bridge in a way.
Yeah. I think the answer is it depends.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, it's not a cop-out, honestly, because I think done in the right way, done sensitively in a way that isn't going to screw over bricks and mortar stores, it can be very good. You know, so I think the game, you know, like I guess Pieces and Games with Cthulhu Wars is a good example. They don't have a route to market, really, which is bricks and mortar. So they're not hurting anybody by going the only route that they have to their very niche audience. And they've done that, and it's good. It's created something that wouldn't otherwise have existed that we love. So that's a good thing. On the flip side of that, I think Hawk with Drop Fleet Commander, I think Mantic with most all of its games, I think that's a very bad thing, because I do think it is the ultimate cynicism from a company.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Games Workshop haven't done that yet. I mean, they tried to screw everybody up over in different ways, but they haven't actually done Kickstarter.
Yeah. Let's hope it stays that way.
So you kind of have to respect them for the fact that they've taken an idea, however flawed, in, say, Age of Sigmar, and say, hey, we're going to do this, and you will love it.
But they're only doing it in their company, in their site.
Yeah. The thing is, they're just so far out of contact with their customer base that they're just producing stuff which is garbage. But that's moving on. That's a whole other topic, and we revisit every week, don't we?
That's a whole other topic.
Yeah, so I think, you know, we've kind of got the overall balance there of it's equal, right? Because Matt, you said no. Oscar, you kind of said yes. I kind of said it's a bit of both. So overall, Kickstarter, it's kind of neutral. And I think it does. It really does depend. I don't think there is a yes or no answer. I think it can, done badly, be a real negative thing.
As we have seen today. And,
yeah, I mean, can you imagine if that first one, that Allies versus IS thing, had got funded? I mean, oh my lord. I hate to finish on that.
I can't imagine it.
So, no, we're going to look forward to seeing our Cthulhu Wars come in September.
And the others.
Before that, we shall get the others, which I believe is going to start shipping March, April time. So, not too far away now. So, as soon as that comes on, we will get it on the podcast. We will get it on the blog.
And it's before my exams, so I won't even have time to do anything with them.
But afterwards you will. But after you've done your exams, then you can get
oh,
to...
Oh, no.
Oh, great.
Something to look forward to.
It is.
To that little beacon of hope through those hard times. Okay, but anything else you want to add, Matt, to the Kickstarter world?
We do apologize if you are that one backer to the Allies. Yeah, so if you are listening to this and you are that $1 backer, we do apologize. You probably want your money back, but that's okay.
It's something.
Yeah, go out and read some books. Broaden your view of the world, please, with your dollar. Buy a couple of books on Kindle. Go to a used bookstore. Go through, have a look at things. Broaden your horizons.
Hey, a public library. Just go for it.
Hey, there we go. So we've ended on a public service notification. Support your local libraries. And on that note, it's been Alex.
And Oscar.
And Matthew.
We'll see you next time.